Welcome to Betting 360, your number one source for horse racing and sports betting insights. Coming around the bend is your host, David Duffield, with another expert interview to give you the winning edge.
Hi, this is Dave Duffield, and welcome to another episode of the Betting 360 podcast. This week I've got a full-time professional punter from Melbourne on the line to talk about form analysis and generating a set of prices that can regularly beat the market. So let's talk to Andrew. Hi, this is Dave Duffield. I'd like to welcome Andrew to the podcast. How are you going, Andrew?
Thank you, David. Yourself?
Yeah, really well, thanks. And thanks for giving up some time. I wanted to talk to you about your background and also some Melbourne Metro ratings. But where did your interest in racing come from just as a kid?
Well, it was interesting because I came from a probably different perspective to everyone else, as I didn't really have big knowledge or passion for racing as a kid. I was mainly one of the normal bandwagon guys who would jump on at the Spring Carnival and go to the odd races at Flemington here and there. But yeah, I firstly got interested in form analysis instead of actually the races themselves first. And it was only until really some good horses like Black Caviar and whatnot came along that I actually fell in love with the horse. But it was actually form analysis that I fell in love with first, and the puzzles and interesting theories that people had about it. Yeah, I got into that when I was 17 and started doing my own markets and analysis and whatnot at that age. And I had some fantastic mentors like Dean Lester, who really helped me at the start to gain a very basic understanding at first and then get into the more complex things, and yeah, just really have learned a lot in a very short period of time. So, you know, still loving it just as much as I was back when I was a kid.
And so it sounds like, you kind of skipped a few years in a way, and you said that you're into the form analysis right from the start. Where do you start at that time when, you know, you don't have, say, a decade in racing or, a father to drag you along every Saturday? How did you go about learning the process of form analysis?
Yeah, so it was basically just emailing people that I thought could help me. And as I said, Dean Lester was one of those. I probably flooded his inbox a bit too much to annoy him at the start. But, yeah, they were really gracious with their time and helping me sometimes ask probably stupid questions to them. But I really was just quite ignorant at the start. And yeah, they really helped me grow pretty quickly, you know, doing probabilities for horse races. So obviously have gotten a lot better over it as time has gone on and gotten to a point now where, you know, I'm really satisfied with the systems that we've implemented and hopefully can use those to find a few winners for the Champion Picks clients.
Yeah, so I had Nathan on the podcast, Nathan Snow, a couple of weeks ago, and he mentioned that he really enjoys the mental challenge of it all, and, you know, there's eight puzzles to solve every afternoon. Do you have a similar approach?
Yeah, absolutely. Although it's mainly the computer which is actually doing the probabilities, we still like to have a look at it ourselves, and particularly top races. I guess every analyst gets excited when the autumn and the spring comes around. The winters can be quite long for some of the analysts out there, but yeah, it's certainly something that, yeah, we do really enjoy. And I guess the perfect example of that was just last week with Lincoln Rupee v Dick Field. It was, you know, it was a bit of a battle royale going on about who was selecting who, and, you know, people were putting their points forward, which were all very valid, and obviously Lincoln Rupee came over the top. So, yeah, we certainly, just like Nathan said, we certainly do enjoy the puzzles that we have to solve every weekend.
And it's the, I suppose, the positive advantage or expected value, whatever you want to call it, that appeals to you. I know you're not the type that wants to, you know, sit at a pokies and just bet. It's the mental challenge, but also the edge that you can get that really does appeal.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess advantage gambling in general is a fascination of mine, even though I basically just stick to wagering and horse racing wagering in particular. But yeah, it is certainly a fascination of mine, and I, you know, like to read a lot on it and, you know, read academic papers and so forth. So yeah, it's certainly, you know, a very big passion of mine.
And you talked about the trusting what the model has generated. So to get to that, you know, further stage, you need to have the earlier stage, which is trying to work out what are the most important, you know, form variables or inputs and weightings and things like that. I know you won't want to go into specifics, but just in general terms, what is included in that analysis process?
Well, yeah, there are dozens and dozens and dozens of variables in a horse race, and we like to input as many as we can, and it's just about prioritising them, really. So, I mean, there's no real secrets to what the major ones are. I think all people who do the form, whether it's on a big computer system or a newspaper, would have the same major ones. And I guess it took a bit of, it didn't take too much time to realise the important ones, because they're naturally the first ones you think of, but it's how to input the more little ones and how to fit them in into your probabilities, which I find interesting at the moment. And, you know, there's always new ones popping up. There's ones which become popular with the media and the general public, just like speed maps probably are now. You know, once you see them in a newspaper and whatnot, which they've been doing of late, you know that the more modern and general punter is understanding of them. So the edge with those variables does become decreased. So you've obviously got to find the other variables which they haven't really picked up on yet, and hope that the value is still there with them.
So it's almost like staying 2-3 years ahead of the mainstream?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, even back in 2010, 2011, when I was doing speed maps, when I started doing probabilities, I started doing speed maps. That was kind of told to me that it was much required. That was still an edge back then, even though, you know, most of the jockeys were having them and the trainers. It seemed the general public didn't use them. All the professionals did, but the general public didn't really have a major understanding of them. That's changed significantly, and everyone has a good understanding of them now. And, you know, everyone has very similar speed maps anyway, so that edge is certainly gone. So it's just about trying to find the next one.
And so the speed maps are a key part of what you do in terms of, you know, the likelihood of a certain horse winning a race, but you're saying in terms of the value that they can bring now compared to a few years ago, that value's almost disappeared.
Yes, I do think so. And it's not only because the public has picked it up on it. For example, if Horse A is the only person on your grid in the on-pace positions, and on paper it looks like it's going to get an easy lead, that it's not necessarily because the punters are going to pick up on that and back it. It's also because the jockeys are seeing it and the trainers are seeing it. So they try and do something about it naturally. And because, you know, with Champion Picks, we're working specifically at Melbourne races, you know, they are very smart jockeys and they do pick up on it. So sometimes what can look a positive on paper could turn out to be a negative. So that's where you've got to be very careful and not necessarily just back a horse because it has a good map. I mean, we generally speaking, we don't like to back a horse just because it has one good variable. So particularly if a horse just has a good speed map and that's why you back it, I think that could be pretty dangerous.
What about something a little more, or potentially anyway, subjective, such as, you know, luck in running or video comments? How do you factor those in?
We certainly do factor them in. We obviously have the video comments and we read them, and if we have any issues with them, we certainly look over the tape, try and quantify what we are seeing through the video. So whether it's a horse being caught wide or it's laying in or laying out sharply or checked, all those sorts of things. In our systems, we are able to subjectively quantify them and input it into the ratings, and that's what we try and do as best as we can.
And again, something that can be quite subjective, what about trials and jump outs?
We certainly do watch them. As I said, we don't back a horse or lay a horse because of a jump out or a trial. We don't like to, as I said before, we don't like to do that just for one variable. We certainly do look at them, and, you know, there are more expert eyes than us on them, just like being the Trials 5 Champion Picks. But generally speaking, good horses will try well. 9 out of 10 good horses will try well. So is it really worth giving 9 or 10 horses in a field in a Group 1 a positive factor because they all tried well? So there are arguments for it and against it. We certainly input it, but it's not a major one.
All right, what about trainers and jockeys? How much of a part do they play in the overall analysis and then the probabilities that the model produces?
We certainly do factor them in, David. Jockeys more than trainers. Jockeys I still think are underrated by the market, particularly in metropolitan races. Yeah, good. It's funny when you see some apprentices and whatnot when they get found in a sticky situation, and the plan that they decide to do can be a lot different to what a senior jockey does. And what I mean by that is senior jockeys seem to have more than a plan A and a plan B, and they seem to be, their reactions seem to be half a second quicker than everyone else. And I think a good example of that was if you watch when the Hong Kong guys came down for the autumn and spring last year, in particular Zach Burton's ride in the Doncaster on Sacred Falls. You can just see once a gap opens, they just do not think twice. They just take it. And I guess that's part of the Hong Kong racing back then where they're all elite jockeys and the snap decisions that they make are so much quicker than they seem to look on races in Australia. So I certainly do think jockeys are still underestimated by the market for sure.
Okay, so all of that goes into the mix, and then the prices, probabilities, which are then turned into prices, are produced. Why have you chosen 92% as the best percentage to frame your market to?
Well, it's obviously gone with a bit of research. When I originally started, I started with 90%, and obviously since when I started, the market has got a lot more smarter, and the efficiency of the markets is very good, so I moved it up closer to 100% to 92%.
So then you've identified the overlay, the staking, we'll discuss in more depth at another time, but it's to the effect of the greater the value or the greater that the likely collect, the more you want to outlay on that horse?
Yeah, that's right. So that's Kelly's criterion, and we obviously have a certain interpretation of that, and that's what we like to use.
Okay, but there are certain races where you don't want to get involved as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm not an advocate on betting on every race or every race that we do probabilities on. I'm more than willing to say to the clients that we just want to leave this race alone. The main reason for that is because our market is generally very similar to the public, so we're just very quick to move on to the next race. And yeah, there'll certainly be plenty of races where we'll do that. So it's not necessarily a negative. It just means instead of just blatantly putting bets on for the sake of it, we're happy to move on.
Yep, but you found the Melbourne Metro Racing suits your style, as in the analysis that you do and the ratings that are produced, and then obviously there's a reasonable amount of liquidity in the market. You probably hope there'd be more if a few of the corporates would take a bet, but it's a good mix.
Yeah, so Melbourne stuff is going very well. We find our system seem to analyse the top grade runners the best, in particular all the stakes racing. That's mainly because their patterns are very predictable and you can kind of get a much better understanding on what a trainer is trying to do with this runner, because you usually know where their target is and their fitness and whatnot. So yeah, our systems do very well on the high class racing, and I guess Metropolitan Saturdays in Melbourne comes under that category. So yeah, that we really enjoy wagering on those.
Yeah, and I don't think I mentioned you're a betting and business partner's name before Jim, but so yourself and Jim work in tandem, got an office and a pretty good setup there, and it's probably, I was going to ask you, is it a bit different to where you thought you'd be, I suppose, going through school and then university and the like? Did you think you'd be a full-time punter?
Yeah, well, I didn't, certainly not. I just guess I just caught the bug and kind of just loved it, so it's also, really enjoying it and making a good living out of it. So Jim and I enjoy each other's company, even though we see each other a lot of the time, but still great mates, and yeah, we really enjoy what we're doing. So hopefully we can bring that along to the Champion Picks clients, and hopefully they can enjoy the ride as well.
Yeah, that's definitely our plan. So on another audio, we'll go into a bit more detail on how a ratings member can use the information you produce. Just wanted to give people a bit of an insight into your background, and also there aren't enough guys who are young and keen and, you know, been bitten by the racing bug. So it's just great to meet a couple that have been.
Yeah, absolutely. And I certainly give plenty of time to young people who have questions, and I've certainly got mates who are very interested in it, and some just don't really understand it. But, yeah, anyone who's got any questions, I'm more than happy to answer it for them. The better the people can get an understanding of this caper, the more enjoyable they'll find it, I've found. So let's hope the joint venture can go well.
Absolutely. All right, appreciate your time today, Andrew. We're really excited to have yourself and Jim on board, and look forward to a whole bunch of winners.
Beautiful. Thanks, David.
Thanks for tuning in to Betting 360. Get more in-depth analysis, tips, and that betting edge by heading over to championpicks.com.au, where you'll find a full transcript of this episode. If you like the show, share us with a fellow punter or drop by iTunes to leave us your thoughts. Betting 360, punting from all angles.